Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Foreign Correspondents Club. My name is Keith Bradshaw with the New York Times, and I'll be your host today on behalf of the FCC board. Before I introduce our speaker today, just a couple of housekeeping notes. One, would everybody please turn off your cell phones now, or at least mute them? We do record these now and put them up on our website, and it's also very irritating for people if they can't quite get the quote because somebody else's phone went off. So please all check your phones now. Second of all, I'd like to tell you about our events next week. We have two lunches coming up next week. On Tuesday, we have Dr. Malik Peres. He was the co-discoverer of the SARS virus. And 10 years after SARS, he will be talking to us next Tuesday about what are the emerging diseases today in Asia, what should people be watching for, what is really not maybe worth worrying about. So that'll be Tuesday of next week. And then following up on Thursday of next week, we have Dr. Gino Strada. He is a famous anti-war activist who's been a strong critic of the American role in Iraq and Afghanistan, Pakistan. He is the founder of Emergency, which provides health and also looks at human rights activism in conflict zones around the world. So that's Thursday. With that, I'd like to introduce our speaker for today. Dr. Zhang is the vice president of the China Executive Leadership Academy in Pudong. He's somebody who's been very active in education in China for 25 years. He's traveled extensively. He's been going to the United States since 1986. He has a reputation as one of the best analysts of politics in China. He's also somebody who really appreciates historic buildings. He's been full of very kind comments about the FCC and about the Ice House building here. So with that, I'd like to introduce Dr. Zhang. Thank you.
So thanks, Mr. Bradshaw. Yeah. Ladies and gentlemen, thanks for invite me to be here, such a very nice place. And first of all, please allow me introduce my colleagues to you. We are a working group here. This is Dr. Li. Dr. Li, please say hello to everybody. Yeah, also from Silla. So, Dr. Li came from Australia. His area is relate to the new media, something else, I think. So if you have any questions, don't challenge me. He's the right person. He's better than I. And also Dr. Cui, her area is international relations. He had study experiences, education in Russia. So now join our schools. I'm from, we call C-Lab, China Exec Leadership Academy, Pudong. C-Lab is a national school based in Shanghai. Officially opened in March 2005. The reason of setting this new international school after the Central Party School, National School of Governors, after those schools, but based in Shanghai, is to prepare our officials, especially the senior officials, to adopt the new situations. New situations means home situations and international situations. So based in Shanghai, because Shanghai and Yangtze River Delta, these regions, has gained so many lessons experienced in the past 30 years. Economically and socially developed so good in the past years. So the idea is that let the officials from different parts of China to share with the officials in Shanghai. So very special schools. You are welcome to visit. You will be surprised to see the schools. And also you will see so many black swans in our school lakes. Yeah. So ladies and gentlemen, I was told before a speech in Hong Kong, better to tell a joke. So I have kept thinking, what joke I'm going to tell. But because I feel nervous and humbled, so all my joke I prepared has gone. So I don't know what to tell. So directly to my topic. The topic, as I ask, as you can see, that's the new policies after the Congress and after National People's Congress and Party Congress. So I'm going to focus on three issues. First, the relationship between the Party Congress and National People's Congress and CPPCC, the Political Consultative Conferences. So this is a special political system different from most of the countries, most of the systems in the world. So just a few words on that. And secondly, I'm going to... Okay. So secondly, I will talk about the outcomes or the contents of the National People's Congress. So what are possible policy directions? Third, I will share with you, talk about the significance or the importance of the sessions, two sessions, or of the Party Congress, all those what I said. So first, this is probably, it is very basic for most of you, but I want to make some connections, so that's why I mentioned that. CPC is the ruling party, the leading strength of all endeavors. So that's CPC's position in China. This party established in Shanghai in 1921. The old building still there. So anyone you have been to Shanghai, probably you have been to Xintiandi. You know Xintiandi? Yeah. So that's just close to that Xintiandi. Yeah, Xintiandi. So you can see it's the mixture, the very historic place, and it's a very luxurious site in Shanghai. You will see some connections. I hope you enjoy there. So, and also, it is the biggest party in the world. The party member is over 80 million. So, consists of 6% of the total population. Probably people believe that is the strongest party, but I don't believe that. So, biggest not means strongest. Soviet Union, they had the biggest in the world. Consists 9% of populations, but dismissed. Collapsed over a night, quietly. Yeah. So we try to learn the lessons from those things. So this is the biggest. And also, what's the job of the parties? They try to manifest it all levels in accordance with the overall situations and according coordination of all different parties, different interest groups. Try to make the political stabilities of whole China, make it developed. So that's the job. So in the leading positions, work with others. So various, I will explain a little bit about that. And the highest leading organs of CPC are the National Congress of CPC. So that's the Congress, National Congress, 18th Party National Congress was held in the before the end of last year. So makes many policy directions or proposals. So, and then when the party's will or party's advocacy, how to make the party's advocacy transformed into the state's will. So this is very important. It's different from 30 years ago. And then followed by the National People's Congress. So People's National Congress is the highest organs of the state power. Four functions of the National People's Congress. First, to make laws. Yeah. So National People's Congress contributed greatly in the past 30 years. In early 1980s, there are few laws in China. There are almost no. Yeah. Maybe three or four laws in China in late 1970s. Now, how many laws? By the end of last year, 240 laws. include antitrust law, law of property. Yeah. So this is very important for People's Congress to make laws. But in China, the local People's Congress no right to make any laws. They only make some rules, regulations based on 13 laws, only national ones. That's their main job. Second, supervision. That means to oversight the government's behavior job. Yeah, theoretically should like that, keep watch on the government. So this is second job. Third, decision making on major state issues. For example, the budget. Each level's government made approved by the each level People's Congress, all level People's Congress. So, and then appointment and remove the major officials, premier, vice premier, ministers of different ministries. So that's their main jobs. If we compare the Western systems, not same, but not, but if I compare, the compare your parliament systems. So this is the National People's Congress. So people will usually ask how and why China pick up that systems instead of the others. Actually, I think in the past years, China did try a lot to try different systems. In year 1898, there is a movement called, in history book, called 100 Days Reform, led by Mr. Liang Qichao and Kong Youwei. The idea is to build China as a constitutional monarchy, because people believe that Japan succeeds the transfer from traditional one into the modern one because they use their systems. UK use their system too. So China should copy their systems. So that's the target object for that movement, but only 100 days failed. So we tried constitutional monarchy, but failed once. Secondly, the 1911 revolution, led by Dr. Sun Yuxian. He came from United States, had education there. So we hope the system will copy the American system. We call it parliamentary democracy. So the division between the executives, the government, and judicial systems, and three differences. So make the differences. So that's the purpose of that 1911 revolution. So the term of Republic of China starts use in 1912. And still Republic of China, the name used in Taiwan. And then since 1949, when CPC took the power, we started to use the People's Republic of China. So simply we can say the republic system starts in China, started from 1912 or 1911. So this is the second try. But the fact was, since 1911 until 1949, there were kills in China. Fightings, wars between the warlands, like the Middle East somewhere. Yeah, between the, or they have the local regional armies. And between the parties. So that's the situation that times. Because China fighting at home, they're fighting each other, easily invaded by Japan. So Japan was occupied the northern part of China 6 years at the very beginning to set the government there. There's Manchuria in northern part, close to North Korea. And then they occupied almost most of the place in China since 1936. And then anti-Japanese war happened. So, and then after that, so this is the history. And China had another chance, 1945. So just now, the picture with Mao Zedong and Chiang Kai-shek. So I talked to Brasher. So if the talk was succeed, what will happen in China? Because the topic that times, Mao spent 14 days in Chongqing, your home place, FCC. Yeah. So Chongqing, 40 days they spent there, mediated by the American government. immediate guaranteed, his safety guaranteed by the American government. The topic was to set a coalition government. Coalition government. So Moore published a very famous article named Studies on New Coalition Government. Published, everybody knows in China, the new government. But failed, because at that time, Kuomintang was the strongest ruling parties. He said, Jiang Kaisa said, we need only one leader, one ideology, one government. UCPC can join the government, but send your representatives instead of coalition government. So failed. And then 4 years, civil wars. After that, in 1949, when CPC entered the office, they organized a meeting, different parties, many people from Hong Kong, to sit to talk what system we should have. And then they set the new system called CPC-led multi-cooperation system. So goes to the CPCC. So very long. Chinese People's Political Consulting Conferences, a top political advisory organs. Why say advisory organs? Because this conference, also 5 year a term, and each level they have their conferences. And many people, about 200 I think, joined the CPCC. So these organizations, they make proposals. They participate in the decision-making process, but they not make decisions. That's why advisories. So, and the role of the advisory body, a political consultation and democratic supervision, and participation in the deliberation and administration of the state affairs. That's their field. But big difference is, they can make their voice. So during that, my boss, the vice president of CLAB, he is Professor Feng. He is the member of the national CPPC. He just came from that conference. He said, that conference is very free. You can take anything. You can talk anything. You can criticize the party. You can criticize the policies. Yeah, but only proposals. No, only criticize. They not make decisions. Yeah, not make decisions. So that's the difference. This conference started in 1949, 9 days before the founding of the Republic of China. So in that first conference, CPC start to set the political system like today, from that meetings. So the multi-party party consulting political cooperation system started. So when people talk about China's party system, usually we say it's one party. Yes, you can say one party, because that party make the major decisions. But we can say no. Why? This is the system, 1+8 party system. That's I create, 1+8. Yeah. And the CPC and the leading position, the other parties together with that. So in China, there's no term opposition parties. In Chinese mainland, there's no term opposition parties, but participating parties. So 1+8 party systems. Try to avoid some parties' affiliations, the differences or conflicts. So that's the system we tried many years. So this list, all the eight parties. Now the Minister of the Science and Technology, he's from one of the minority, we call the non-communist parties. In Chinese, it is called the Democrat parties. So Democrat parties, that's the term started used in 1940s, 1930s, make differences between CPC and Kuomintang. So start use that. The word still used, Democrat, but translate into Chinese English. People sometimes use Democrat parties, sometimes use minority parties, or non-communist parties. So that's all the other parties. They're much more smaller. So the parties handling and also the decision-making process. For example, the end of last year, the 18th Party Congress was held. How long have you? 10 minutes already?
15.
Oh, sorry. Yeah. So the examples, the 18th Party Congress, they make many decisions, the Party Congress. So, but this is the party decisions. It's not the state will. So, and then follow the 18th Party Congress, the National People's Congress. So the main job of the Party Congress or party authorities, that's related to the policy proposals or the official recommending the officials, the important posts, officials and some others. So all these policy proposals will go to the National People's Congress. And during that process, many meetings will be organized by CPPCC to listen to them, to get their views. So that's the process. We use the term so consultative or deliberations, consultative process to make that. And then also the National People's Congress take all the proposals from the CPPCC and from the wills, from the medias, and then put in the process, procedures for the National People's Congress. So the party's advocacy usually goes to the National People's Congress. And then when it is approved by the National People's Congress, then it becomes the state's will, legally, can implement it. So that's the way to prove that. Like a five-year plan, everybody knows five-year plan in China. Also that's, governments make the draft, and the party committee screen the draft, listen to the other parties, other groups, and then become a proposal from CPC. And then this proposal goes to the National People's Congress. When it is approved, screened, improved, and then go to the back and passed and go to the government for implementations. So that's the process, the usual process of China. Yeah. Okay, that's the new leaders, you see? Yeah. New leaders from the 18 new party leaders, 7 people. Yeah. And this is Mr. Xi Jinping. Yeah. Mr. Xi Jinping is the first China's top party leaders born after 1949 with the doctor degree. So Dr. Xi, and Dr. Xi has been to our school 3 times. The latest one was the vice president of the Republic of China. So he himself is a very nice person. I like him very much. And this leader had a very experiences in the countryside when he was young. Though his father was the official, for example, the vice premier, something like, and also head of Canton. But himself, in the 1960s, 1970s, suffered greatly. So he know the pains. Yeah. Especially 7 years in the very poor, remote area in Shanxi provinces. And also he had experience work as a county head, and also the head of Fujian province, Shanghai province, and Zhejiang. So himself, so that's the new leader, born after 1949. Okay, and this is Mr. Yu Zhengsheng, the new head of CPPCC, and also new leader, Mr. Li Keqiang. Mr. Li Keqiang born in 1955, yeah. 2 months younger than I. Yeah, 2 years younger than I. He got 2 months younger. Yeah, so I tell my age. Yeah, okay. Anyway, that's not secret. Okay, Dr. Li Keqiang had a law background. That's very important for Chinese leaders. But China traditionally is not his rule of law. Traditionally, not rule of law. Even many things today, not rule of the law. People complain that. But now, I think in the past 30 years, especially from Mr. Li Keqiang, I think big changes will be happening. That's I hope, I suppose. So that's the new leaders, also born from after 1949. So in China, leadership transitions is very important. Fortunately, peacefully transferred these years. This is very good for China's interests. Okay, the outcomes. The leadership of new administration has been elected. This is very important in China, all levels, different leaders. Okay? Second, a new round of reform of administrative system has been initiated. So this, in China, this is always very difficult. People talk a lot about China's economic development, but not really notice the changes of the government. In late 1970s, how many ministers in China? Anyone knows? 100. 100 ministries. Ministry of Chemistry, Ministry of Chemical Industry, Ministry of different. This is the planning economy. That was in planning economy. Exactly copied the Soviet Union system. So in 1982, changed into 50 ministries. And then how many? 25. The last ministry, very much related to the planning economy, was the Ministry of Railway. The problem of railway, that system was business and government no differences. So he can do both things, railway ministry. Let's cause the corruptions. He can make decision, he can use this project, ask the company belong to him to do it. So corruptions. Yeah, and then this is big changes. But not only the number of the government offices, more important, the function of the government, the role of the government. In the planned economy, China, the government takes all the things, responsible for everything. So in China, there's a saying, if you are the good officials, you like a parent. What is the parent? So in your English words, you have a word, nani government. But nani, the job is do the jobs, but no authorities. Parent has the authorities and has the responsibilities. That's the Chinese government, not only from CPC. 2,000 years, very strong government. So that strong government sometimes is good for something, like infrastructures. So there's a saying, China's development because of the government. India's development in spite of the government. Because the government not strong, the private business developed quickly. But China private stayed on all the government state business, government control that, so the private business not good as good as, but our infrastructures doing good, better. So how to avoid the problems of the government take too much, and then government change, big changes so far from now. But this is not means from 100 to 12, 25 is changed. Still long way to change. But that change, at least three benefits, will make another three changes, I believe. First, the economic will be, more private economic will be developed. Second, more social organizations, use your term, NGO, we call the civil organizations, will be developed. Third, the democratic system, we call the socialist democracy, will be very much promoted because the government's role of the government is changed. So, and also the government can do what he should do, like social affairs, public goods, or something else. So this is very important, the functions, the reform of the government, not only the number of the offices. The third, special attention is given to the people's livelihood. We have so many problems with livelihood, social welfare, medical systems. So from this government, special attention, more investment will go to those areas. And fourth, the determination of fight corruption is demonstrated. So yesterday, last night, I had a dinner with some Hong Kong businessmen. So some people, they had a restaurant in China. They feel they're suffering from that. Because no business. Yeah. The small restaurants is okay because paid by individuals. But the luxury ones, no business because very strict limitations for use the public money for meals. So many restaurants, they had no business, which is good in the long term. Yeah. So fighting corruptions. Just now we mentioned the Bo Xilai. Yeah. So the also one of the cases from Chongqing, yeah, because your FCC was born in Chongqing, I suppose, yeah, before Bo Xilai was born, I think, yes. Yeah. so that's in Chongqing, yeah. So the corruption case, so many people not happy with that. And one of the reasons of the collapse of the Soviet Union and former Soviet Union, because of the corruptions. If the people, so there's a saying in China, the water can be voting the boat, but the water can flow over the boat. So people is the water. So how to fighting corruption is extremely important now. I think this government, especially Xi Jinping, will strict firmly to do that, because this is the survival of the party and the nation. So more strict. And also, a little bit,
One more minute.
So we're quite clear our problems. Just a small list of the problems, like a transformation from ignore the patterns. So we are in the dilemma situations. One is we need more investment for more job positions. But secondly, the patterns of the growth, big problems. So, and also the disparity between the regional disparities. Yeah. Many remote areas, if you go to Shanghai is a developed area. But if you go to some remote areas, so China is like the world differently. The three or four worlds. And also insufficient investment, medical science and education, and pollution, food safety, inflation, especially nowadays, inflation, with the QE policies. I think they also inflate. Housing price, corruptions, all these challenges. Internationally, we had the challenges too. The economic slowdown in China's major export market, EU, US, Japan, and some countries. And also competition with all friends. That's our problem. Yeah. We competition in some developing countries on manufacturing and industrialized countries, high value added products. So easy to make enemies. Yeah. And also the big guy efforts. Too big. Because China is too big. When you are too big, China's population is equal to, let's say maybe, if we put North American, South American, and European country all together, 50 countries, 50. Such a big guy, a big elephant go to a small village. Now we call it the global village. Go to the village, because the elephant is so big. Though you do nothing harm, but people feared, scared. You are so big. So that's also the problem. And so doubt about China's peaceful rising. So many problems. So that's why this Congress and National is very important. New stage, we need new starts, new policies, new methods. So that's why I think it's very important for that transition. So I invite Mr. Li for question and answers, because I don't think my listening comprehension is better. So maybe when this question I ask, we need some interpreter. Okay, thanks for that.
Thank you very much, Dr. Zhang, and our thanks also to the Ministry of Foreign Affairs for bringing Dr. Zhang to the FCC today. With that, I'd like to throw the floor open to questions. Please introduce yourselves, and then please also wait for the microphone. Who would like to ask the first question? Francis, please.
Francis Moriarty, RTHK. Thank you very much for that historical analysis of where we find ourselves today. I think a lot of us would not really know what democracy with socialist characteristics would look like, but I think many people in this room would have a very good idea what democracy with Hong Kong characteristics would look like. So my question is, how much latitude do you think the Hong Kong government is going to have on universal suffrage, given the promise that is in the Basic Law, but also the concerns that you mentioned about stability?
Okay, I would just translate your question.
Please.
And correct me if I'm wrong. 他就问的就是， 我们很多人可能比较了解中国特色的， 中国有中国特色的民主是什么样， 但是我们不太了解有香港特色的民主是什么样。 那么我想的问题是， 这个香港政府在这个， 普选这个问题上有多大的这个控制权。
Okay. So this is a very big question, and also it's a very hot question in China, also I think in Hong Kong. I better in Chinese, but yeah. Sorry for that. The more complicated words I couldn't express properly. 那么在中国的话，我可以简单的说，中国的民主、中国的人权，无可非议的是在过去的二十、三十多年来有了巨大的进步，这我想不要去讨论，这是事实。
I think when you talk about democracy in China, there is some facts that we don't need to discuss it. But that is, in the past 30 years, great progress has been made in the area of human rights and in the area of democracy. Of course, there are big room for progress too, for improvement too.
从香港来说, 我是1986年 第一次来过香港, 后来陆续来过很多, 我觉得在过去的100多年里, 香港有了很大的发展, 但不能不看到的是从97年以来, 香港的民主, 香港的经济, 香港的民主, 各个方面也有了很大的发展。
I visit Hong Kong for the first time in 1986, and I think we all agree, or I think that in the past 100 years, especially since 1997, economically, both economically and both in the area of democracy, Hong Kong has witnessed great progress.
我觉得香港的民主包括普选，有三个关键词，应该大家都应该取得共识。
I think we can reach consensus on three keywords when it comes to democracy in Hong Kong or to general suffrage in Hong Kong.
第一个就是有序的参与，也就是说，香港的民主。 必须在一个法律的框架下去进行和推进。
First word is actually law or order. So the democracy of Hong Kong should be conducted and developed within the legal framework.
那么什么是 legal frame呢? 我认为基本法就是一个基本的legal frame, 还有人大 National People's Congress的一些相关的
I think the legal framework we are talking about is first the basic law, and second, relevant clauses, relevant policies passed by the Standing Committee of the National People's Congress.
没有法律，包括没有法律意识的民主，将是非常危险的。这个在美国、在欧洲都有很多经验，包括现在在。 在埃及等等这些国家发生的，大家都会证明，民主只有在法律的框架下才能有序的推进。
I think a lot has happened that has made us to believe that democracy without the guarantee of law is very dangerous. What has happened in the histories of Europe, in the history of the United States, and now what is happening in Egypt.
在美国的话，如果布什和戈尔的选票发生争执的时候， 大法官可以说了算，但在亚洲国家，大法官可能说了不算。
In the United States, in the famous case between George Bush and Al Gore, the Supreme Court can decide that, can make that decision, and that is actually followed and abided by all the American people. But this would be unthinkable in some Asian countries.
第二个，我觉得是。 必须是符合香港的实际情况，它的 real situation in Hong Kong， 也能够符合香港同胞的自己的利益。
The second point I want to make is that all the decisions, and the development of democracy should be in line with the situation of Hong Kong and should be in the interest, basic interest, fundamental interest of the Hong Kong people.
第三句话的话呢，应该是循序而进 ，by degree, gradually.
I think the third point I'm trying to make is that this process should be a gradual one.
就是美国的民主也演进了200多年。
In the United States, this process has been more than 200 years.
就是在英国、欧洲。 democracy 这个词, 当时的有钱人是不喜欢的。
I think if you look at the history of democracy, look at the world, the history of the world democracy, actually rich people and wealthy people, powerful people in the European history, they hated this word.
Yeah. 所以在西方把自由民主用的一个英文词是 liberal democracy, not freedom and democracy. Liberal democracy, it's the adjective.
So that's why you call that liberal democracy.
Yeah, 所以它是有限制的。那么关键就是刚才说的香港的普选的这个制度，我想有2017年的安排，还有2000年的安排，它都是一种安排。我相信，只要通过充分的协商，有序推进，它一定会取得进展。
I think we have the some of the milestones settled, and I'm sure that if we follow these milestones, there will be a good, very good output.
从个人来说，如果香港的这种推进取得巨大进步，带来巨大的利益福利的话，我相信我们就是内地也可以学到很多东西，所以要很好的学习和观察，这是我个人的意见。Personally,
I think if the processes of Hong Kong are very successful, the mainland can learn a lot from Hong Kong too, and I would see that very much to see that happen.
谢谢。
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Okay, back here, Edith, please.
At the moment, Edith Terry is my name. At the moment, China has territorial disputes with two sets of important neighbors, Japan and ASEAN. China has been pursuing its claims to these islands in the East China Sea and South China Sea quite aggressively. I won't go into the detail, but what would you propose in terms of approaches to reduce tensions and persuade these neighbors that China is indeed about a peaceful rise?
我想问的是有关于领土问题有关的，现在中国与两类的这个邻居有领土问题，一个是日本，一个是东盟。 在东海和在南海呢，这些岛屿问题上呢，中国采取的措施都比较富于侵略性。我想问你的问题是，中国采取什么样的措施才会减少这个邻居对中国和平崛起的这种担忧？这个问题呢是一个非常外交的问题，但是我也很喜欢这个问题。This is a diplomatic issue, but I like these kind of questions.
首先的话呢，中国是跟大概十四个，如果我没记错的话，跟十四个国家有落地的边界。
If I'm wrong, just correct me. But China has is bordering 14 countries altogether.
包括跟海上有纠纷的越南，我们有2370公里的落地边界。
Including Vietnam, which has also a territorial dispute on the sea with us, but actually on land that border we have actually 2,370 kilometers border with Vietnam, land border.
所以中国跟其他部分国家的周边的邻居的领土问题都是通过谈判已经得到了解决。
I should say that we have resolved most of our territory issues with our neighbors through negotiations.
那么这个说明通过谈判是能够解决领土问题。It
has actually proven to us that territory issues, territory dispute can be resolved through negotiation.
跟菲律宾跟日本这几个岛屿的上面一些争议，那么这个争议呢，实际上是由来已久的，中国历来采取的态度是。
We now have territory disputes with Japan, with the Philippines, and these has been there for quite some time. But our position has always been that we should table those disputes.
所以当时一个著名的说法是各自正义共同开发，跟日本就有一块海面就这样决定的。
At that time, the NSA, there was a consensus by the leaders of the countries that we should set aside the dispute and develop the territories jointly. If we can follow this and act on those consensus, they should have no dispute now.
不幸的是，首先是日本跟有些国家，他启动了不搁置争议这样一个动作。
Unfortunately, started with Japan. Some of the countries has actually left behind these consensus we reached with them.
那么既然你不搁置争议，那么我们就采取了一定的行动。
Since you, these countries, now actually.Have left behind, set aside the consensus that we should set aside the dispute. Now China have to act.
So, 现在中国每天派船在钓鱼岛边上，也烧了不少油啊。
So that's why we are send our boats in those disputed areas, including Diaoyu Island.
以前是不去的。
We didn't go there.We used to not go into those areas. I think the ultimate resolution is still through negotiation. Because war will harm all of us. If we fight Philippines, it's like big guy is bullying a small guy.It doesn't look good on us.
但是在没有办法的时候，可能也就这么回事，所以尽可能去谈判解决。
But so that's why we're trying our best to resolve these issues through negotiations.
Okay.
Okay. Next, over here, Robin, please.
Mr. Jiang, thank you for your talk. Two quick questions. First.If you had to quickly say the two big differences between Hu Jintao's regime and Xi Jinping's, what would they be? Secondly, we're hearing a lot of talk of constitutionality. It's hard for us reporters to know whether that is academics talking or whether that is something we should take quite seriously that the government will move forward on, that is a practice of the government, constitutionality.
我有两个问题。第一个问题是有关胡锦涛和习近平这两位领导，他们最大的差别是什么？你觉得？第二个问题呢？我们听到很多人老是谈宪政、谈宪法，那么是不是这个宪政只是一个学术界的讨论呢？还是政府有具体的措施来实践，真正的根据宪法来行事，依法治国？
按照中国的文化习惯呢，像我这样的人是不便于去讨论。
You know, the cultural conventions of China actually is making me very hard to comment the differences between senior leaders in China. If you promise not to coverage my comments on the newspaper.I would say something.
Well, actually, we are on YouTube as well, so we are. It is on the web, so we do not allow speakers to go off the record. Is what I'm saying. Everything said at the podium is on the record, but we would welcome your on the record comments.
首先呢，这两个人他处于中国的不同的发展阶段，我认为他们两个都是好领导，他们处于不同的发展阶段，可能对这个会程有一些不同的施政方略。
First.Both of them are very able leaders, but they are facing different situations in China, and so their policies might be different. Mr. Xi Jinping was educated in the area of arts and humanities, social sciences, and he had very good, very rich experiences working in the grassroots organizations.
中国两千多年来有一个文化传统，宰相是要就大的官 是要从县官里去选的，将军是要到士兵里去选的，这是中国两千多年来有一个古训，两句话我也背不出来了，是一个古汉语。
In China, we have a tradition. We select the prime minister from county governors. We promote our generals from foot soldiers.
那么从这个意义上讲，他在两个县做过县官，还有好几个地方，所以他对基层比较了解。
So Mr. Xi Jinping, has been heads in two counties, and he has worked in the grassroots organizations, so he knows the grassroots situations.
是吧？所以我相信，还有他的那个他的人文、法律的学科背景，也对他的执政有帮助。
I think his education in the fields of arts and humanities, social sciences, will help in his policy.
习近平前面的几个领导，包括很多部长，大部分是理工背景。
And the leaders before his predecessors were used to be educated in the field of engineering and social sciences. So we should actually observe and see what will happen.
刚才讲到宪政这个问题，是吧？因为宪政首先有不同的解释，所以他在学界有很多争论和讨论。
You talk about constitutionality. There are lots of debates in the academia, and there has been a lot of different interpretations and explanations.
但是我们撇开这个宪政这个概念，中国必须是走法治的道路，走依法行政的道路。这个问题，将这个习近平、李克强最近反复提到，比如说。把权力关到笼子里面去，其实很体现了一种法治的思想。
Let's just push aside this term, to talk about the rule of law. I think this is the direction of the future government in China. Both Mr. Xi Jinping and Mr. Li Keqiang talked about putting the locks, the powers behind the cages.In the cage, that is, we have to govern according to the law. We have to rule by the law.
李克强在记者招待会上反复强调了政府的权力、法律的约束等这些问题，实际上也体现了这种思想。
And in his conference, of several days ago, Li Keqiang reiterated the importance of law in the government. He talked about the limit.Of the government's behaviors according to the law.
所以中国的目标是建立一个民主的、法治的国家。这个目标，它必须往这个方向走。所以法律会起到很越来越重要。
So the direction of China and China's government is to conduct its behaviors according to the law and rule by the law. That is for sure.
Thank you all very much. We've actually gone over time. Dr. Zhang, are you able to stay a little longer if people want to come up with more questions?
Me happy.
You're happy to do so. Wonderful. I apologize. We're a little over time here, but we'd like to thank you again very much for coming here from Shanghai. We'd like to thank the Foreign Ministry for organizing this event, and we'd like to thank all of you for coming, and we hope to see you at our lunches next week. Thank you all.
Thank you.
Our speakers